Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of The Deep Dive, later than promised. That's purely on me, people. Nothing to do with Cole, nothing to do with Pete. You already know by now. In fact, I'm not even apologizing for it. Just know it was my fault, though. I'm your host, Mashal St. Patrick Hewitt, and I'm joined, as ever, by Cole and Pete. Gentlemen, it is the 22nd of February. There are 13 games left for Bromley in League Two. The last time we checked in, they were top of League Two. They're still top of League Two. But it feels like we're reaching squeaky bum time. At the time of recording, Walsall play MK Dons tomorrow. Bromley could probably do with Walsall winning that, or that being a draw of some sort. But as things currently stand, Bromley are, if I'm not mistaken, 4 points ahead of the team who are currently occupying fourth place in the league, which I believe is Swindon. Swindon having played a game more. Since we last met, just to recap what the scores have been, we beat Swindon 2-1, drew 2-2 with Crewe, beat Gillingham 4-1, beat Fleetwood 2-1, and then we've subsequently had three draws on the spin, Notts 1-1, Cheltenham 1-1, and Harrogate 0-0. So still not lost, 15 games unbeaten. But in that stretch of seven games out of a possible 21 points, Bromley have picked up 13. Cole, let's start with you. I don't even know where to start, actually. 13 from the last 21. On track, or are you worried?
We're still unbeaten at home. We're still top of the league. A little concerned, not with the results, but just the fact that we look quite tired. I think if we win our next game, at home to Accrington next Saturday, if this was the blip, then that's fine. Obviously, anything but a win against Accrington, and then we do start to feel a little bit more nervous, perhaps.
Pete, well, which side of the camp you're in? And the reason why I say side of the camp is because, and again, I don't know how much credence we should pay to social media noise. For all I know, of the average 4,000 or whatever it is now Bromley fans that consider themselves Bromley fans in some regard, maybe for all we know, 75% of them are just like, Bromley top of the league. What's there to worry about? But there's if you based your knowledge and understanding purely on social media noise, you'd think that Bromley are in the midst of a crisis. But which side of the camp are you in?
Well, hey, we're very blessed to be in this position. At all, you know, if you'd have offered anyone the you know, even the newer fans, I think even if you told them at this point in the league campaign Bromley would be where they are, they'd be surprised, you know, given Bromley's budget and all the rest of it. But it's there. They've hit a patch of the season where they're playing against teams that have got everything to fight for, as most teams do at this time of the season. And they're playing teams that are coming to form. So it doesn't worry me. I mean, if you look at, you know, if we're talking about X more wins, well, if you look at the last three games, they've rallied up 3 points from a possible nine. Or do you look at that as one win more towards the total, those 3 points? I'm not worried. I think, you know, just to be in and among it, in the sticking in the top three, that's all you need to do, stick in the top three. And they're on course for that. And I think they're weathering a tough patch. But my concern is, like Cole said, the players are looking tired and there seems to be a little bit of reluctance to rotate. And that the reluctance to rotate is the thing that worries me.
Yeah, we're obviously going to get into that. I will just say that for those keeping track from when I first said that 10 more wins would get Bromley automatic promotion, since I said that, they now need 6 more wins, if I track rightly. Now, as Pete's basically taken the words out of my mouth, because Bromley have been picking up draws as well, the 6 more wins is actually accurate. 6 more wins is 18 points, right? Bromley are currently on 64. 6 more wins would give Bromley 82 points. Because everybody is taking points off one another still, I have a very strong, as I did when I first said 10 more wins, I have a very strong feeling that just over 80 is likely to be enough, because too many of the top seven play each other. In, like I say, there's only 13 games left. If I'm not mistaken, six of Cambridge's last 13 games are against teams in the current top seven. Now, for all I know, Cambridge could win all of them. But the point is they have to navigate them. In fact, tell a lie, if I'm not mistaken, because I should shout out the person who sent me these stats. Let me see if I can quickly access them. Shout out to Luke Taylor. Luke Taylor sent me some stats, and hopefully it works as we're recording right now. He sent me some stats, and now I can't read them. But the point of the stats he sent me, it might not be Luke, actually. It might have been somebody else. If I'm not mistaken, from the stats that were read out, of the current top seven, Bromley, and I want to say it might be Notts, face the fewest amount of top half teams in the run into the end of the season. Bromley's games, I think, all come at the end when we play Salford, Walsall, Cambridge, and MK Dons, which is the last four games. But prior to that, if you take the other nine games that are coming up, they're actually, if you rank on position, we are playing more lower ranked sides than everybody else is. However, that doesn't guarantee anything, as we've just seen, right? We've just drawn 1-1 with Cheltenham, 0-0 with Harrogate. So I'm not even certain at this stage of the season if you can really stick too much relevance on that stat. A win is a win is a win is a win, regardless of who you're playing at this particular point. But let's go to the point that Pete mentioned. Rotation is the word on everybody's lips. I'm going to be critical here. Andy is likely to watch this, so I suspect that Andy will raise this to me the next time he sees me. I have rarely openly disagreed with something that Andy has done, because I think he's earned the right for his success over the last 4.5 years to do what he wants. And if he believes this is a team to pick, I generally go, well, you know what? Your record suggests you know what you're doing, so who the hell am I to say you shouldn't be doing that? When I saw the team to line up against Harrogate yesterday, the first thing I thought to myself was, yeah, we're not winning this game. It's going to be a draw, right? And I shouldn't be able to do that. I shouldn't be able to look at a lineup and go, not convinced we've got enough there on that pitch to, given the run we're currently on, to eke out a win. Cole, go to you first.
Yeah, I agree, unfortunately.
Go on.
Yeah, we look really tired. The team on Tuesday, I thought, was really leggy. And then when I saw that we were putting out a very similar lineup yesterday, I thought, wow, you know, if we get a point out of this, that'll be good. And not because of the talent of the players or their ability, but just because of how tired the performance was against Cheltenham, you know. We ask a lot of our players, like the system that we play, the style that we play. You've got to give everything in every game. And maybe it's time to move a few people around and give some people a rest.
Pete, in the context of giving people a rest, here's a catch 22, though. How many get a rest? And not only how many, what are the games that you target to give people a rest? Because if it's not going to be, with respect, Cheltenham at home and Harrogate away, how many more games have you got really where you can go, right, okay, this is the game to kind of mix things up a bit and put some fresh faces in?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, it's like when you make, five substitutes all at once in the middle of a game. It will change the cohesion of everything. And whilst you could say, you know, making that amount of changes before a game, at least everyone's had a chance to know what they're supposed to be doing and bed themselves in. But it's still asking a lot for the cohesion to, like, just make that many changes, which is, I think, why Andy Woodman is doing sort of one or two changes per match, is to try to keep that cohesion. However, against Gillingham, his hand was forced. two centre back, brand new centre back, you know, but barely knew the rest of the team's names, and came in, did a great job. Ben Thompson came back into for that game, smashed it. So it feels like sometimes you need that fresh blood. You need those players coming in with something to prove. And I think there are enough players that have been sitting on Bromley's bench waiting for their chance, that given that chance, we'll take it. That would be my assumption. The question mark, Ben Crowhouse, he's had numerous chances here, coming off the bench, going back and riding the bench. And I think right now I would put Ben Thompson in front of him, in my estimation, in terms of goal threat and all the rest of it. So Ben Thompson would actually be the player I would keep of the two. But other than that, I think it's just about every position on the pitch is fair play for, you know, open season, apart from maybe Grant Smith. Omar probably locked in, now he's fit again. And Jesse Deborah as well, who's just come in and looked like he's been playing for Bromley for years. So everyone else, open season.
Let's speak about some individuals, Cole. And I'm going to... I cannot believe what I'm about to say. But there's an elephant in the room here. And the thing is, we have to have robust conversations. I think anybody listening to this who takes it personal, none of this is personal. I think we just have to have robust conversations, right? Let me just read something out to you. Let me find the stat. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Michael Cheek hasn't scored in 8 games. Right. Wow. You also have another striker who's on double figures, who's riding the bench game after game after game after game. One of two things has to happen for me. If it was down to me, one of two things happen. In fact, let me give you three choices. Choice number one, Cheek's gone on streaks before, so we shouldn't actually be worried that he's not scored in 8 games, because when Cheek does then score, he then tends to score, like, I don't know, 4 in 6, 5 in 7, something like that. He's a striker who goes on streaks. So option one is, you know that when he eventually scores, a run's coming of goals. Option two, you put Nicky Kabamba up front with him and say, we've got to change something. It's looking a bit samey. Cheek up front on his own, having to battle usually three defenders around him, hoping someone can profit off his knockdowns. And it's not even like Cheek is getting a lot of chances per games at this moment in time. So option two is you partner him with Kabamba and then have to bring Marcus Dananga in from the cold and say, come sit on the bench, because obviously there needs to be a striker who can come off the bench. Or option three, which is the nuclear option, but I would argue, I would understand if it did happen, Kabamba starts and Cheek goes on the bench. What are we saying, Cole? Yeah. Go on, answer that.
It's either option two or option three for me. Option two, the only problem with having two up front is they need some supply. And the thing that everybody that I was standing with on Tuesday said about Cheltenham, it's fine having two strikers up there, but they had nothing to work on. There was no supply. But it's interesting that Andy Woodman mentioned Marcus Dananga in his pre-match interview, and that's the first time he's even mentioned his name in months. So he must be in his thoughts that might be an option, that we go with two up and we put another striker on the bench. I think there's an argument for going three at the back again as well, especially as we've got three exceptional centre-backs at the moment. Or the other option is to go with Nicky Kabamba up front, but I think we need to change it up. If you go one up front and start with Kabamba, then you're going to get a very fired up Cheek when he does come on, because, you know, it's not a position he's used to. Or we go with two up top, but if we go to the top, then we need to get better supply to them. We really missed Corey Whiteley on Tuesday against Cheltenham. And obviously, Ashley Charles went off at half time, and there was no supply. So that's an issue we have to address as well. But yeah, either you partner the two, or you do give Cheek a rest and put Kabamba up front on his own.
Pete, before we go into formations, so Cole's given his views on the Cheek conundrum. there's some other players who I think are part of this conundrum as well. Now, Pinnock scored against Cheltenham on Tuesday, but I would argue that Pinnock has gone off the boil as well, right? Certainly in terms of his first half of the season was so exceptional that it's easy for me to say he's gone off the boil in the second half of the season. And whereas Cheek could be like that, we ain't seeing the goals with Pinnock, we ain't seeing the same volume of assists or even big chances created. And this team isn't just about Mitchell Pinnock, by the way. It's not just on him to create these chances. I want to throw him into the mix.
Yeah,
I want to throw someone else in. Dory,
Ashley Charles as well. I would imagine.
I was going to throw some more. Okay. Marcus Eiffel, I think, is struggling at right back now. I would say about Marcus Eiffel, and I assume both of you have seen Andy's comments post Harrogate, where he hooked him at half time, and didn't really mince his words about why he hooked him. And when he said that, in my head, I was like, yeah, but he struggled against Jody Jones. Granted, Jody Jones, best winger in the league, probably when he's on form.
Yeah.
Struggled against Jake Bickerstaff, I think it was, for Cheltenham. And then you hook him at halftime against Harrogate, right? So all of these questions I've got in my head about rotation, it isn't just me saying rotate for rotate's sake. I think there's several players who just aren't in good form right now. Even if they're tired, they're just not in good form right now. How do you want to address that, Pete?
Well, I think form and condition go hand in hand. We've all played, you know, Sunday league and, you know, six-a-side, five-a-side football. You aren't as good, you know, if you're any good at all in the first place, you aren't as good once you've been running for half an hour, 45 minutes, whatever. You know, all those little moves you were able to do earlier in the game, once your legs start going, you can't operate at the same level. And it's the same, you know, obviously at a much higher standard when once you get to Bromley kind of players, but it's the same. When you've got all these minutes adding up in your legs, you can't do the same stuff you could do back in September. Therefore, it goes hand in hand. Poor form happens to be coming at this point of the season, because it's in the legs. It's the minutes in the legs are adding up too much. And these guys haven't suddenly become bad players. They're off the boil, as you've said. But I think the reason is they need a rest. They need someone to pick up the slack for them. And, I mean, we saw Ashley Charles the other night have a poor one. And Andy Woodman explained it away that he's got a little knock. We'll take him at his word, of course. You know, it wouldn't be surprising if guys were picking up knocks. He said Marcus Eiffel didn't train much last week because of an ankle issue. It makes sense. You know, they're going to be picking up stuff. In fact, if anything, it's a miracle that they haven't had bigger injuries this season so far. If you only had Jenkinson out for any period of time. Otherwise, everyone's been patching up and muddling through. People need to be able to pick up the slack. And I think Andy Woodman needs to be able to trust his players on the bench to come in and pick up the slack, not just be impact players. And that's the one thing I would say, the one catch 22 of putting Michael Cheek on the bench for a while is I don't think he would have the same impact as Kabamba off the bench. Michael Cheek is a trebuchet. He's a siege weapon. He will grind you down. He'll play in places you don't want him to play. He'll back into you. He'll wear you down. He'll draw fouls. I don't think Nicky Kabamba is quite the same kind of player. Similar, physical, but a slightly different type of player. And I don't, but his impact off the bench is fantastic because he comes in with this energy. He comes in with this, I'm just going to go for everything. And you can't do that for 90 minutes necessarily. Whereas Michael Cheek kind of does that. He just goes, he gives enough of himself in every challenge that he makes a nuisance of himself. And he knows where the ball's going to be next. So he's always in the right place at the right time. So that would be my one concern. If you do a like-for-like swap, Cheek for Kabamba, Cheek wouldn't have the same impact from the bench. So in that regard, I would go two up top and bring Marcus Denanga in from the cold. That would probably be my preference. Go three at the back, got the centre backs to do it. But then who misses out? Ben Thompson, maybe. that would be unkind on him. I think he's done well. Ben Crowhouse, you know, I haven't seen anything from him in recent games to suggest he's any better than Ben Thompson, or, you know, deserves to be in the team without doubt. So, yeah, it's time to make changes. I feel you've got Lakar Samuel. I'm not sure what he's up to at the moment. He seems to be an out of the match day squad for the last three or four games. So maybe he's injured. Not sure. But you've got Carl Jenkinson, who came on at the weekend. Is it time to give him a run? I think so.
Yeah, I think there's decisions to be made. Let's say they do go to 3-4-1-2 or 3-5-2, call it what you want. The first decision you have to make is, who is your right wing back? That would naturally suit Marcus Eiffel, but assuming that we're saying that he's not in form, I don't think wing back naturally suits Lakar Samuel. It doesn't suit Carl Jenkinson. So you're kind of pinning yourself into saying, well, let's give Marcus a go as a wing back rather than a right back. You then have the issue at left wing back, in that Pinnock has to play because it's Pinnock, but then where does Idris Odetayo go? Does Odetayo go to play the third of three centre-backs, or are you bringing in Zeke Medley to play the third of three centre-backs? Or, as you say, Pete, does Carl Jenkinson come in, and then you go Jenkinson, show me Deborah? But the point is, you're supposed to have these kind of... It's good that you can have these kind of arguments and discussions, right? Cole, where I want to go is, before I go to some of the final points, when the transfer window opened, the thing that I said, and this is my agenda, and I hold my hands up and say this is an agenda that I'm pushing and was pushing. I always thought the position we should have been targeting was central midfield, because, and I get it, right? I had a good discussion with a close friend of mine, Steve, who you know very well, Cole. And I hope Steve doesn't mind. Steve was at another game. He was at Dartford versus Cray. And Steve sent me a message at halftime. Where is it? We play the 40%, do what you know works, and don't deviate. It's effective when it works and feels awful when it doesn't. But you either trust your system or you don't. Right. And that was just us going kind of back and forth on the recent results and so on and so forth. And I said to Steve, yeah, I hear that. I hear that for sure. But one of the reasons why I was saying we should target a central midfielder in the Ashley Charles mold is, I still maintain, no matter what style you have, the only style we don't have as a way to switch things up is progressing the ball. Let's just call it progressing the ball. On the ground. let's just call it that. And yeah, that's not me being critical. We're top of the league. What works. We're 15 games unbeaten. So I am not criticizing what we do. But sometimes when I see games like Cheltenham, or I see games like Harrogate, and I'm like, we kind of probably need to do something different here, because just slinging in crosses, and I know that that's reductive, that's not the only thing we're trying to do. Once a team's got to grips with how to stop it, you kind of need something else. And we seem reluctant to turn to Demola, who's had a few couple of cameos and look to attack his man, chop up his man and drive at his man like that. But obviously he's young, so I think we're reluctant to turn to him. Do you get where I'm going with this, Carl? I've kind of just been rambling there, but don't really have a different way.
No, we did. We spoke about this, didn't we, when we were talking about the window, that was the one place we probably would have quite happy with all the business we did, and that we didn't do too much because I didn't think we needed to. But probably that's the one little bit of magic that we miss. But I mean, it would have been very, as I think Pete said at the time, it would have been very difficult to have persuaded anybody to come into the squad and say, yeah, you've got to pay. You're going to play second fiddle to Ashley Charles, but we want you to play there when he can't. So it's a tough one, isn't it? But yeah, that's where we needed to strengthen, definitely.
When it's not working, Pete, with your view from... Where do you stand again? Are you behind the goal or east? Or
north,
east
Terrace? No, yeah, north Terrace.
North, right. So obviously Cole's on the east, you're on the north.
Yeah.
And I'm in John Fiorini. So we have three different angles by which we're looking at this game. When... it's, for want of a better word, when it's ugly, when it's ugly, what's going through your head when you're watching it? Because I'll be honest, when I'm watching it, I'm like, well, it is what it is. We'll soon get a cross or a set piece that's going to lead to a goal. So, oh, well. And I'm very much of the school of football, John Beck style, where it's like, listen, if you have a system that works, Wimbledon under Joe Kinnear, if you have a system that works, flipping, play that system for us because it's effective, right? But it does look ugly sometimes when it's really not working. But what's your views from the north or the east?
From the north, it can feel very staccato. When Bromley have got the ball in front of the penalty area, teams tend to sit very deep and very narrow. And it feels like Bromley come to a standstill and they're kind of waiting for someone to go full Iniesta and sort of dink some perfect little through ball through. Otherwise, it's just, you know, if Bromley got the ball in the edge of the area, it's just people, you know, larruping shots and hoping for a deflection or anything. The North Bank really gets up for when Bromley get the ball wide and one of the trickier guys gets on a run towards the end of the game, runs towards the byline and flashes a ball in. That's when Bromley look at their most dangerous, when most teams look at their most dangerous, when they get that kind of angle working. But when it's not working, it's frustrating because Bromley seem to have this sort of default of whip it into the middle, see if you can get something on it. Try and then, if you get a knockdown, recycle and go again. There isn't much of a plan B, which is why the North Terrace gets up for players getting the ball on the floor and having a run with it, because that feels like a plan B. It feels like something different. It feels like something that, you know, that the opposition have gone, oh, hang on, you know, we're having to defend something different here. That's how it feels from my perspective in the North Terrace anyway.
Cole, I'm like, you know, I'm yet to watch a game from the East, so I don't know if the East has become a side terrace of discontent or I don't know what the vibe is over there.
No, it's pretty good at the moment. I on Tuesday I stood with guys that have been watching Bromley for nearly as long as me, and we lived the Ryman One years. Okay, so but there were times, and we all turned to each other and said it on Tuesday, where it was reminiscent of that, because the ball never touched the floor. I don't have a problem with it. It works. We're top of the league. It's worked all season. But if I was a neutral, I definitely wouldn't come and watch it, because it is what it is, and it's a means to an end. But at times it can be really frustrating, because and it's interesting what Peter said. It's the same on the East Terrace. If Pinnock gets the ball, if Brooklyn Ilunga gets the ball when he's on, if Corey Whiteley gets the ball, there's a change in atmosphere. There's a, oh, something, you know, here we go. Something might happen here. But when it's constantly just, it does, and when the ball's in the air a lot, and it was on Tuesday, sometimes you're like, wow, come on. This isn't working. But the results would tell you that 75% of the time it does work. Mm. So you've got to trust it.
So looking forward, we have Accrington on Saturday. I'm kind of hoping that what Andy's told the squad, I'm kind of hoping, given that we don't have a Tuesday game, I want to believe that Andy's given them a break.
Yeah.
And just, I want to believe that it's not just right back into training, train hard, then Saturday's game comes around. If I'm in his position, and it's easier said than done, because what the hell do I know? But if I'm in his position, I'm saying, you know what, guys, I'll go have 2 days off. Disconnect from the football. Don't come in on Monday. Don't come in on Sunday, whatever it is that we do. You actually just need to go home. Go home and chill with your kids and your family if you've got them. If you've got the chance, go book a 24-hour trip abroad or whatever it might be. Like, do something to get away from it. Feels like we're in that moment right now. But that notwithstanding, our next set of games are Accrington at home, Oldham at home. Actually, this five, let me read the five, because this is actually critical. Accrington at home, Oldham at home, Grimsby away, they're chasing the playoffs in fairness. Bristol Rovers, who are fighting for their lives, and then Newport away, who are obviously also fighting for their lives. Let's take that five-game stretch. Five-game stretch, 15 points available. I'll say it again. Accrington at home, Oldham at home, Grimsby away, Rovers at home, Newport away. How many points, Cole? And give me two answers. How many points do we need versus how many points you think we're going to get?
Okay. Well, from the next five games, how many points do we need? I'd say we need at least 10. We have to beat Accrington on Saturday. That's and Oldham's going to be tough because they've just absolutely torn Gillingham them apart yesterday. The teams against the relegation battle is going to be tough. And you know the one that worries me a lot is Grimsby because we never play well at 12:30. There's not been a 12:30 game this season where we've got going until the second half. And that one worries me the most out of all of them. But equally, Bristol Rovers will be desperate for points, as you said. Newport as well, you know. But yeah, if we can start with a win on Saturday and take a point off Oldham, then all of a sudden you can maybe say it might come to the winning, the unbeaten run might come to an end at Grimsby, but then we've got to pick it up with wins against Bristol and Newport. We have to beat those teams if we're serious about what we're going to do.
So you're saying, are you saying we need 10?
Yeah.
So three wins, one draw, one loss.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Pete.
I've got a funny feeling it's going to be a narrow win against Accrington, probably 1-0. Okay. Oldham's going to be a tricky one, but it's a Tuesday night. They've got a long way to come on a Tuesday night. So, again, I think a draw. I think Cole said, I thought, you know, probably take a draw. Grimsby, hard one to call. Possibly a draw there. Bristol Rovers, I'd say that'd be a win. I'd say Newport should be a win as well because I've seen nothing but whenever I've watched Newport play, they look terrible. But you know, so what we say, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, so 10 points, I suppose, is what I would be sort of hoping for from that bunch.
I'm gonna say 12, which I'm trying to work out in my head if I'm being. That's not what I think per se. I'm saying that's what they need. Mm. I can accept that there'll be a defeat in there. I don't know who to, but I can accept there'll be a defeat in there. But I think they have to win four games, which sounds absolutely ridiculous because other teams are going to drop points. Like, say, let me give you, for example, Cambridge's next five games, just as an example. So Cambridge's next five games are MK Dons at home, Accrington away, Gillingham at home, Walsall away, Salford at home, and then even then Grimsby outside. They've got a harder run, right? Yeah. Do you see what I mean? That's Cambridge. Let me take Swindon, who are fourth at the moment. They've got Bristol Rovers at home, Crawley away, MK Dons at home, Gillingham away, Tranmere away, right? So possibly a similar run to us, but I just get the sense that I'm going to say 12, I'm going to stick to 12, just because in my head, I've always said, whatever it is that Bromley are going to do, they need to have as much of this wrapped up before those final four games.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the flip side to that is Bromley are very good at getting themselves up for the big, big games, right? So as much as I'm looking at those last four against Cambridge, MK Dons, Walsall and Salford and be like, flipping hell, that's a tough four to end with. In a weird way, maybe it's the games against Newport and Bristol Rovers that I should be fearing more than those games at the back end. But I think when you're in a unique position like Bromley and you have a chance of creating what would be the most unbelievable piece of history in the entire existence of the football club, you want to give yourself as much leeway as you possibly can. So when I see these next five, the draws against Cheltenham and Harrogate notwithstanding, I think you've got to try and target 12 and then see where you're at after that. Now, last bit, and then we'll wrap the show. Name your starting 11, assuming everyone is available. Right, I just want to see where you both go with this. Assuming everybody is available, name your start and whatever shape you want it in. Your starting 11 versus Accrington.
I would stick with, if everyone's available, everyone's fit, and no one needs a rest, I wouldn't change much. It's just, are they on form? Are they fit? Are they, you know? Have the other thing that we perhaps not considered is how well other teams have worked Bromley out. How much they have done their homework. They've had a lot of games to look back over, not only the games that Bromley have already played against them, but you know, Bromley in recent games as well. And I think Bromley need to just sort of keep evolving a little bit and keep surprising people. But I wouldn't change much. The question mark comes over Jude Arthurs or Hondemark, because I think they're both fantastic, but you have to choose one over the other. I'd probably go Jude Arthurs and bring Hondemark on with his energy as an impact player. But they're so, you know, so both so good. And the other question, so Ben Thompson or Crowhouse, Ben Crowhouse, I would go Ben Thompson personally. But if everyone's fit, I wouldn't change much. But that's it. Are they fit? You know, how fit are they?
Really? So just to clarify, so you're still going 4-2-3-1 in that?
Yeah, I would stick with what works, stick with what you know, stick with what the players know. If everyone's fit and you can, but if there's any doubt over where players are in terms of their form, in terms of their fitness, in terms of their conditioning, swap them out and do something different. But if everyone's fit and everyone's rearing, after a week off as well, I'd stick with it.
Cool.
Yeah, I've changed my mind about the formation since we've had this conversation, because you're right about if we go for back three, you've then got to consider who the wing backs will be. And I don't think we've got the right ones at the moment that are in the right condition. So I would go with, I think you either have to put Samuel, but more likely Jenkinson at right back, Idris at left back, Omar and Jesse Debrun, and obviously Grant Smith in goal. I would put Thompson in, Charles, and I would play Hondemark and then bring Arthurs on because he's got the energy. Pinnock, but Ilunga wouldn't come on for Pinnock if he's looking tired or if he's not making the impact that we expect. And I would put Kabamba up front on Saturday.
Instead of Jeep.
Yeah, go with one up. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I thought I had the answer until I heard you two. And now I don't think I've got an answer, because I genuinely believe Kabamba is due a start, but I just now Pete's given me his answer. I'm not actually certain, because there is another argument to say. Pete gave a really good justification for it. Some players are just better coming off the bench. Brooklyn Lunga is one of them. Kabamba seemingly is one. Even Ben Thompson, his most effective performances have been when he's come off the bench to impact a game. All that said, I'm going to tweak it this way. I think Eiffel definitely needs to sit on the bench for a bit. So it's Jenkinson or Samuel at right back. Then I'm going to go left field here. I'm going to move Corey Whiteley into the 10. Not the right-hand side of the three. I'm moving Corey Whiteley into the 10. So no Crowhouse, no Thompson. They can both sit on the bench and impact off the bench. And then I'm asking Brooklyn Ilunga to start. Admittedly, out of position, because I'm going to ask him to go to the right-hand side. I know he's left-foot dominant. I'm going to ask him to go to the right-hand side and ask Pinnock to stay on the left-hand side, right? and I'm giving Ilunga a start. Now, I get it, because then if you give Ilunga a start, what are you then bringing on if Ilunga needs to go off, right? Whether it could be Demola or Jay, or dare I say, put Eiffel further up the pitch. Like, we have options to try different things, right? I think we've forgotten that Eiffel can actually play further up the pitch as a right-sided attacker. So it may be that Eiffel may well be carrying a bit of a knock. He may well be, his conditioning may well be down. He's had a few stinkers. But that doesn't mean he can't, you can't adapt. You can adapt his position. Tell him to get on the ball and just attack his man. But just from, so I think, and this probably goes full circle to what we said at the start of the show, there are some options probably staring in front of us, staring right in front of us that we could explore. And I'm leaving Cheek up front, by the way. We could explore, but it just needs a little tweak here or there, I suspect. But that's what I'm saying. Hopefully they've listened to it, and between the three of us, they'll go, you know what? Mash don't know what he's talking about. Pete don't know what he's talking about. Cole don't know what he's talking about. But in the midst of it all, there was something. Pete and Cole, I'll give you both some final words, and then I'll wrap it.
Yeah, like I say, we went on Saturday, and we'll all be feeling fine again. If this is the wobble, we'll take it, right? So yeah, let's just keep the faith in the team, and you know, push on for the last quarter of the season, last third of the season, even.
Yeah, 13 games. Pete?
Yeah, I, from my perspective, not worried. It's fantastic to be in this position, but if you're serious about being in this position come the end of the season, this run of games is very important. You can't keep drawing. It's time to throw a few surprises in there, catch teams off guard. They think they've done their homework on you. How, you know, throw them a curveball. Mm-hmm. And yeah, as you say, you know, try players in different positions. If Ashley Charles has got one knock too many, you know, try something different. There are options, but it's time to mix it up a bit. That's assuming everyone, you know, if assuming players are out of condition. If everyone's fine and fit, you know, keep on it, but do still find ways to throw a curveball.
Listen, people, I should have said at the top of the show, hopefully, if I've done this correctly, some of you are listening to this on from bromwithlove.news, and you actually are accessing it through the website. This is the first podcast which you should be able to listen to as audio only. If you're watching this on YouTube, then brilliant, like, good, watch it on YouTube, that's what suits you. But I've listened to the feedback. Some of you have said, you know what, Mash, I need to just listen to this as an audio when I'm going to work or on a lunch break. I'm not really au fait with the YouTube thing. So hopefully this has worked, but time will tell on that front. And going forward, that will be the plan. You will now start to get these as audio pods through the website as well as on YouTube, if that's what you prefer. Mm-hmm. I've been Mash on St. Patrick Hewitt. Colin's been Colin. Pete's been Pete. We should be back very, very soon, but you just never know. For all I know, the next time you'll hear from us is when we've got promoted. but if we actually do this properly, you should hear from us in the next 2 weeks or so. Thank you for listening as ever. This has been From Bromley with Love, and we'll be back very, very soon.